Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Stone Cold Shots. It's the professional wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. We're back again. We took a little summer break. We returned. Our return was overshadowed by another return. Some guy, Phil, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So we thought we'd take a second break to come back again. Maybe this return will get a little bit more hype. This is the first time we've done a podcast episode in 7 weeks. Or something like that.
And if we don't get enough attention, we're going to go away again until we get the attention we deserve.
Yeah, so you better come in hot with those fucking reviews.
Yeah, you aren't going to get any ice cream sandwiches.
Nothing from us. You get nothing.
So you know the drill, or maybe you don't, but every 2 weeks, supposedly here, we like to rate, recap, review a professional wrestling pay-per-view or a pape. This week, we thought we'd do something a little fun, a little different, a little special, if you will, for our big return. But before we get to that, why don't you guys tell the Stone Cold Shots universe who you are, your name, tell them your name, and tell them who was your first favorite wrestler?
Well, it's me. I'm back, baby. I'm back, baby. It's the internet darling, Josh Felix Pryor. I'm wearing my finest smoking jacket. I'm here on the podcast with two of my favorite people on the face of this goddamn planet. And we're doing what we love the most, which is recording content for all three or four of you out there.
Yes.
My first favorite wrestler, I mean, without a doubt, it's Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan was my number one. You know, as a kid, Hulk Hogan is bigger than life. And then the Ultimate Warrior came along, and then he was my favorite. And I think Macho Man in there for a little bit was my favorite. But yeah, Hulk Hogan, number one. And if you were a kid growing up in the 80s and you have a different answer than that, you're full of shit.
At least you're honest. I'm Lauren. I'm a regular darling. Y'all, if you've been listening for a little bit, you know that I have the worst memory ever, and I just can't retain any information. I can barely remember stuff that happened last week. So I have a very hard time thinking back to when I first started watching wrestling. I feel like Seth Rollins was a really big deal at the time, and I remember immediately really liking him. I feel like I wasn't as into John Cena when it first started. I feel like it took me a while to warm up to John Cena. I think I was really into Seth Rollins because he was such an overt heel. Like, I was way more, what's the term? Is it like a mark or a smark where I was like, I actually fell for like heel and face dynamics where I was like, I don't like that guy. He's mean.
I think that's just
He's
a regular
such a
coward.
Mark.
A smark is like a smart wrestling fan, they call it, right? And smart is heavy
right.
Quotations, right?
Right. Right. Yeah, but I think Seth was one of the only heel wrestlers where I was able to get past my my feelings of, I hate him, he's so mean, he's a coward, blah, blah, blah. And I was able to appreciate him as like an actor, like a performer, doing a bit, and I liked it.
Nice. Good answer.
Had nothing to do with us watching wrestling right around the month that Seth Rollins' nudes were leaked.
No, okay.
I'm nobody's darling. I am your heel host, Campbell Falconer.
Boo!
And my first favorite wrestler was Daniel Bryan, you know?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Started watching wrestling, like, you know, right after. We missed the big sort of WrestleMania 30, but sort of came in, and it was like when he was chasing the Intercontinental belt, and I was just like, I like this guy, you know, he's a small guy, he does the yes thing, he kicks the fuck out of people, he's great, I just loved him, he was a beacon of positivity, you know, he was a character that I like immediately just like understood, you know.
That's awesome, that's a great answer, and it's really on point for this episode too.
I was going to say, man, if you're a fan of Daniel Bryan, have I got an episode of Stone Cold Shots for you? It's this one.
Guy's very similar in name.
We figured with the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, coming to AEW, another big thing that everybody's talking about right now, we should go back and check out some of the more like slept on catalog of Bryan Danielson before he ended up in WWE. So we're taking a look today at like four of his matches from Ring of Honor. Josh, were you like, was Ring of Honor in your purview of professional wrestling?
Not at all. Actually, the last match we're going to watch for this, not to give anything away, was actually in Toronto. And and I had no idea at the time. It wasn't even on my radar. I do you know what year that was?
2008.
So yeah, so I was in Ottawa. No, I was actually overseas in Iraq at that point. So that's a story for another day. But yeah, like Ring of Honor wasn't even on my radar. I think the most I heard was like, you know, on the internet, like rumblings of, you know, Samoa Joe and CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and all these indie darlings that were tearing stuff up. But, you know, I'll be honest, after ECW went away, I kind of just focused on WWE for a little bit. And I actually think around this time was my only real break from wrestling. I think I stopped watching wrestling really around 2005 to 2008-ish. So it wasn't even
perfectly the years that we're covering right now.
Yeah, exactly. So I had no real like purview to any of this going on. And also on a side note, you know, wrestling's exploding right now. Do you guys want to talk about the current state of wrestling and everything going on right now? Because there's a lot of good shit happening right now.
It's the fucking best. It's like
when's the last time you've been this excited to be a wrestling fan?
It's crazy. Every fucking week, every single week, I'm like excited. And it's one of those things where it's like, I'm excited every week for Wednesdays, and I'm usually like fairly excited for Fridays, although it does kind of, especially like this week, seems a little B-show-ish, you know?
Yeah.
But every week I'm so excited for Wednesday, and every Wednesday I am left feeling like completely fulfilled as a wrestling fan. It's not like it's the best thing I've seen in my life every week, but it is consistently good. And then even outside of that, like, you just like hear about shit happening, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, Ron Funches is wrestling, you know? Or like, oh, go and check out the fucking MLW Battle Riot. It's insane, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like,
or like everything Zack Ryder was doing. The scene, everything outside of WWE right now is so exciting. And like even SmackDown's been really good for the last, you know, like month or two. It's honestly, I again, the last time I was excited to be a wrestling fan was like when, like, I think like late 90s, like, or Summer of Punk, maybe, like when that stuff was going on. But
right,
like really this excited about like tuning in every Wednesday, you know, keeping up like on Twitter with like, you know, again, like Zack Ryder's been hilarious. He just lost the internet championship. To Effie. Fantastic stuff going on. Lauren, what do you think about all this?
I mean, I agree. I haven't been a wrestling fan for a huge amount of time, but this is the most excited I've ever been about professional wrestling, for sure. And AEW is a very consistently good and rewarding product to watch, whereas, like, not to like pit them against each other too hard, but like I do feel like WWE has been having a pretty steady decline in quality and, like, for me, just investment. Like, I would still be watching NXT every week, but I would feel less and less invested in what was happening.
Yeah.
Whereas for AEW, I'm consistently interested all the time. And I do think that's separate from all of these new huge performers that they've been getting, such as like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson, and Adam Cole, baby. like, I don't think that it's just because there's all of these like new big gets coming in that's making it exciting. I think the content, like week to week itself, is very good always.
Yeah, and it's, it just kind of adds to it, right? Like, it just adds to that momentum, you know? And they're doing such a good job of sending people home happy, if you will, right? Like, and it doesn't always have to be that. Like, it can, like, sometimes be, like, MJF getting over in the main... Like, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, but they're so good at, like, listening to the people and then being like, yeah, here's Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson debuting the same night. Now here's a huge fucking CM Punk promo where he just is having a love fest in the middle of the ring with all the fans. It's like, this is all the stuff people want. Why wouldn't you just give people what they want? I'm so used to this bad relationship I've been in for the last 38 years with WWE.
to turn this into like a little mini segment here, there was a sign. At Arthur Ashe Stadium that Lauren pointed out to me that said Vince fears coherent storylines.
Right? True.
And it's like, that's the thing, is it doesn't have to be amazing every week. It doesn't have to be fucking CM Punk debuting every week. It just has to be consistently good, and things have to consistently make sense, you know?
Yeah.
And that can be something as small as like your Anna Jay and Ty Conti versus Penelope Ford and the Bunny storyline, yeah. Or it can be as big as fucking Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson versus Kenny Omega. It's,
yeah.
I have two more things that I want to say really quick. One, we are going to cover a fucking GCW pay-per-view because that is something that I think has a reputation of being like blood and guts bullshit. And I've been watching a few of those recently because of the Matt Cardona stuff. Like, that totally worked. I've started watching it because of Matt Cardona and just hearing about that. And the wrestling on those shows is fantastic. It's not the best production, but it's solid. And I want to cover one of those with you guys.
1,000%.
And then the other thing that I want to say is, this is a hot take right now, and I could be... We'll revisit this at, like, the end of the year, I'm sure. I think NXT 2.0 is actually going to be really good. I think it's going to be a big change, but I think the wrestlers that they've debuted and the reaction that they're getting from people for those wrestlers, it's a thing where it's like, when everybody said like, oh, they're just going to debut like these fucking 6-foot athletic monsters, sure, and it's not going to be, and I think that's exactly what they should do. Like, yeah, they tried to do NXT, and AEW did it way better than they ever could.
Sure.
And I think if they just lean into it and commit and be like, this is going to be a fucking house of big boys, Bron Breakker is fucking... I'm aboard the Bron Breakker train.
Well, that's who I was going to bring up. Like, honestly, like, if you want... It's a shame that he doesn't have the Steiner last name, because I think they're going to, like, have him as, like, Rex Steiner or something like that, like, originally, which is a fucking sick name. But that guy's a superstar, and if that guy is going to be main eventing a WrestleMania in 5 to 10 years, right? Like,
yeah.
As soon as he puts it all together, that guy's a star.
Fucking like that Parker Boudreau guy looks great. I think his name now is just like Gunnar Harland or something like that. They gotta stop giving these dog shit names. But like that episode was... I think a lot of people were ready to cry the sky is falling as far as NXT was concerned.
I think it's good, because I think the biggest complaint on WWE for the last little bit is they're not making new stars, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and they're unable or unwilling or whatever. So they're just tweaking it. So, like, you can take Bron Breakker today and put him on Raw or SmackDown, and he'd be fine. And I think that's the direction where they're going, where they're moving away from more of the AEW style of the star, which is, like, great work rate, you know, cool gimmick, you know, blurring the lines between heel and baby face. And now they're going back to the old kind of 80s, 90s formula of, like, let's build these, like, WWE, WWF-esque stars, and then let's get them ready for Raw, let's get them ready for SmackDown. And if you look at, like, across the board, all the guys that, you know, kind of debuted, they're all Raw and SmackDown ready kind of already. Like, they just need, obviously, to tune up their craft, but, you know, they have all got the look.
And I think the thing at the end of the day is that, like, WWE, more than anything, just, like, because for so long they were the only game in town, and everybody else on the independent scene is kind of specialized, right?
Mm-hmm.
AAA is doing, like, Lucha stuff. New Japan is doing, you know, like, and AEW is kind of doing the thing that WWE was trying to do for a while really well. And I think WWE at this point just needs to look back and go, what are we actually good at?
Yeah.
What, like... Let's build a bunch of fucking John Cena's and Dave Batista's and Braun Breakers. Like, they're really fucking good at building guys like that. Look at Roman Reigns right now.
Totally.
And for them to take NXT 2.0 and be like, all right, NXT had this fucking run of, like, pulling all the indie darlings, and then somebody else kicked our ass at that in a year. So now we're just going to do the thing that this company has proven we can do really, really well. And I think if they lean into that hard enough, it's going to be a really great product.
Totally. And I want them to be successful. I want WWE to, like, make it and be a good product and be an alternative to AEW. But right now, AEW for me is the number one show. That's the A show right now.
Easily. Should we get into...
Let's fucking go. Let's do the damn thing.
All right. So we're doing four matches from Bryan Danielson. So I keep having these JR moments where I keep wanting to call him Daniel Bryan.
That's okay.
but yeah, so this is all on Ring of Honor's YouTube page. You can go and look it up. These are great matches. We kick things off. In 2005, we are at Glory by Honor. This is a match for the Ring of Honor World Championship between Bryan Danielson and James Gibson.
Yeah, aka Jamie Noble. Yeah. Make out with him, Nydia. Yeah, get it, girl.
Of J&J Security.
Yeah. Jamie Noble is he was fantastic, and honestly, I never saw any of his Ring of Honor stuff. Like, I heard he was champion for a little bit there, and he had some great matches. But actually, I haven't seen any of his Ring of Honor stuff until I watched this match. So. I don't know how familiar you two are with Jamie Noble / James Gibson, but this was a first for me.
For me too, and it actually makes a lot of sense now that he was scouted by WWE to be in the spot that they put him in, which was basically a shitty, like, comedy enforcer sort of character. Because one of the things that came through for me so much during this match was how, like, expressive and silly he was. Like, I don't want to say he was, like, silly, because he was a very, like this was a fantastic match and he was a very credible threat, but, like, he was, the way that he sold being injured, or, like, the way he sold pain, was very theatrical, and it felt a lot like a kids wrestling show as opposed to a adult wrestling show. And I loved it. Like, I was totally behind it. And he has such big expressive eyes too, like, perfectly round eyes. I don't know, that makes sense that WWE saw something in that and, like, chose to utilize him for his personality, right?
He was, so I don't know if you've seen any of his character work as Jamie Noble before Seth Rollins, and
no.
So, but he was from a trailer park. His finishing move was, like, an ankle lock that he called the trailer hitch. And he had this, like, really, like, deep southern accent, and he played it up. He was, like, the perfect sports entertainer, but, like, when he got in the ring, so that's when they were kind of, like, living their short-lived cruiserweight kind of revival that they had going on. Jamie Noble was a big part of that. So yeah, it was really cool seeing him kind of in this Ring of Honor environment.
Yeah. So this match kicks off, and it is, like, it's so funny because this match kicks off and it's, like, the technical wrestling opening that, like, we're so used to seeing. Like, every NXT match starts with, like, the hammerlock, the, like, flip out of it, the wristlock twist, the fucking, you know, a lot of that shit.
To me, that's, like, a very NXT UK sort of thing. Like, it's what they say, like, is British wrestling or whatever, is, like, that uber technical fucking wizard man.
It was Zack Sabre Jr., right?
Yeah. And it's like I had that moment where I was watching it and I was just like, oh yeah, this is 16 years ago.
Yeah, which is wild.
It's like this is happening like almost concurrently with like Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, like the time, you know, like to think about that, to think about like The Rock was still like a regular, like every week wrestler while this was happening is insane to think about.
Well, and it's nuts too, because like, so watching this match, you can put this match on today on like any show and this match would be like praised by the internet, right? Like this is a solid technical wrestling match. And it was also funny to see because I haven't seen Bryan Danielson in a match, you know, for his whole WWE run. But then watching the Kenny Omega match he just had on Grand Slam, I was like, this is very similar. Like, Bryan Danielson has a style that works. And it's just like Kenny Omega has, like, that really slow start to a match, but then it, like, kicks into, like, you know, fifth gear, like, about at the 15 or 20-minute point, and then it, like, goes hard. Bryan Danielson also has a style, and I noticed that kind of watching all these matches. And it's fantastic. I'm all about it. Like, I thought this was a fantastic match.
It's even a thing where it's like, because yeah, there are those, there's a few like things in here that are trademark Bryan Danielson things that he kept through his WWE career as Daniel Bryan and is still doing in AEW right now. But there's also some things where it's like, he's way more, one, it's weird to see him working heel, right?
Yeah.
And he's like way more vicious in a lot of his strikes and a lot of his submissions. But he's also like, it's really cool watching him being like, oh, he's a little green here. You know, there's a couple of things. There's like he hits like a kip up immediately into a drop kick at one point that was like amazing, but he almost didn't even fucking get it, right? Like it very much felt like there's like a believability to how not smooth he is when he goes up and does that, like jumps up, like runs up the turnbuckle and does the backflip thing. When you watch him do that in WWE, it's like he could do it with his fucking eyes closed. When you watch him do it in any of these matches, it's like, oh, it's a move of desperation and ingenuity for him to escape the hold or whatever, right?
Well, it's interesting because like I think the way they booked him in WWE was that he was like the guy who got beat up for most of the match and then came back with fire, right? So his fire was his booking. And then in Ring of Honor, the difference is he's in control. Like he's dismantling his opponent. Like so it's different booking, and it's strange because, again, like going back to the most recent Kenny Omega match, it felt very similar to that with like kind of like a tinge of WWE booking in there. Like so it was kind of strange. Lauren, what do you think about all this?
I totally agree. Like I picked up on that immediately. Like I was like, oh, Bryan is like in control. He is dominant in this. And I was at first I was taking it from a very like he is facing a similarly sized opponent right now. Like he's not in the WWE where he's facing like a brick wall of like a ginormous man. Where the storyline is very naturally like he has to climb, like he has to chop down this tree, like he has to like get the shit kicked out of him before he comes back with a vengeance. Like he is facing an opponent who's way more in line with his own physicality and like his own skill and his own sort of set of moves. Like so it's way more of a test of skill or like technical wrestling. But yeah, I also like the viciousness was really palpable. Like and that's also a thing that WWE just doesn't really do anyway, because they're a very like safe, like by the book sort of company, which I get, but it's like this felt very visceral and like violent for so much of it. And it really seemed like Bryan was just clocking Gibson in the face and like Gibson was hitting him back. And I was like, they are fully hitting each other in the head right now. And then And the amount that Brian uses headbutts and stuff is very upsetting. Yeah,
I think that's a trend we can all agree with. That,
yeah.
like especially like this and like the upcoming, I would say in two matches that we're gonna cover.
Yes,
it's a little much, and especially to know how this is all gonna play out. But also, let's all give props to James Gibson's trunks in this match. I feel like
the John Deere trunks.
The John Deere.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
The just like speaking on like Brian's viciousness here is really funny because it doesn't translate to like any time that he tries to talk and any time that he tries to like taunt someone as a heel, he is so like clearly a nice person. So, you know what I mean? Like there's a point in this match when he's got him like tied up in some fucking like insane hold. Gibson gets the ropes.
Sure.
And the ref's counting and he gets up and he tries to do the snotty like I have until five referee.
I love that. It's
so dorky. It's like he's trying to be like the malicious and it like he comes across as a huge nerd.
Yeah.
And it still works for a heel character, but it's a different his the way that he vocalizes is a different type of heel than his physicality in the ring.
Totally. Because like physicality wise, like he's vicious.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's like a vicious wrestler. But like as soon as he opens his mouth, I think you nailed it, Campbell. Like all of that disappears, right? Because it's just like he's just like a funny nerd, like you know what I mean?
And he's so clearly even in this match just like has you can tell that this guy is destined for like fucking superstardom, right? Like
sure,
he is. Yeah. He's so charismatic, and even outside, that's the thing is like even outside of the work rate, because like James Gibson in this is like a great worker, but I wasn't watching him being like. Oh, why didn't this guy ever like get a bigger push in WWE? I was like, no, it makes sense. Like the guy in this match who is just like oozing charisma and character out of every fucking pore in his body is the guy who made it further, you know? And that's no shade to James Gibson. He's great, and I'm glad that he had a long career in WWE and they still have him working backstage.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. But there's one guy in this ring that is clearly just overall more entertaining to watch. There's one guy that I want to see more of.
I put my finger on the problem with Daniel Bryan being a heel, and it's that he always looks like he's about to laugh. Like, all the time. Daniel Bryan looks like he's always just on the verge of, like, breaking out in laughter. Because he's having such a good time, and you can't mask that. Like, the best actor in the world couldn't mask what Daniel Bryan would need to do in order to cover up the fact that he's having the best time either shit-talking his opponent, shit-talking the crowd, doing goofy shit in the ring. It's impossible for me to ever buy that man as a legitimate heel for the rest of his life.
Yeah. Like, it took me a while to notice that he was heel. It took me a really long time. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was because they were both so vicious, but I it took me way longer than it should have. Like, I should have picked up on signs, but I was so ready to like him. I've also never seen him be, well, that's a lie. I've seen him be heel before with like the wooden championship, like ultra vegan thingy. But like, I'm primed to love him. So
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Good luck, Bryan Danielson.
Did you have a bald head rating for this, Josh? What's the wait? Okay.
I just want to cover the finish first before we jump ahead to the bald head ratings. We don't even know who won, you know?
Yeah.
So we got. I want to shout out. James Gibson hits this crazy pin attempt where he does like it's almost like a poison rana, but instead of like wrapping his feet around Danielson's head, he throws it under the armpits,
which is cool.
That move was nuts. I've never seen that before. Like, how is that the one thing from 2005 that didn't make it through to like the indie wrestling boom? More people need to do that.
Oh yeah, like the tree of woe that Brian was caught in. Mm-hmm. Like, and then like James Gibson like wrapped his legs around his head and then hung outside the ring.
Yeah,
that's so cool. And that's all I was thinking. I was like, there's so many cool things. And it's like, yeah. Hopefully now that Bryan Danielson is back, we get some of this like cool innovation.
No.
I'm with you, Campbell, Gibson, 100%.
Gibson also sinks in one of the lowest Boston crabs I've ever fucking seen.
Yes.
That was crazy.
That was so good.
Yeah, Danielson keeps going for the cattle mutilation to no avail, and ends up turning it into a cross-faced chicken wing and wins the title with a submission move that isn't like his specific submission move. I thought they told the story well there, where it was Gibson had the cattle mutilation scouted and he had all of these counters for it to get out of it, but Danielson was just like that good and that technically proficient that he could sink in something else. He could still like keep a hold on him. That really, really nice little storytelling to finish that off. So Danielson wins for how many bald heads?
I'm just gonna add to that really quickly. Like I like the storytelling, and I hope this continues with Bryan Danielson, that he can win with anything. I don't want him to just win with the like LaBelle lock or whatever it is. You know, mm-hmm. I want him to win with cattle mutilation. I want him to win with a cross-faced chicken wing. Also, cross-faced chicken wing to this day is still, I'd say, top three for me in like favorite submission holds. It's so good. It's such a good submission hold because like you can really like sell it and crank it, and then it's mm-hmm. like you see both dudes' faces, like, you know what I mean? And it's such a like a dramatic move. I hope that comes back in a big way. Marty Skull, your piece of
Lauren,
trash.
Lauren, quick, what are your top three submission maneuvers?
I like the chicken wing one.
Yeah.
Because it's very clear, the name. The wolves.
The wolves.
Because you don't got the wolves.
Wait. The John Cena one where he just holds their face gently. That one. He cradles their head, allows them to rest a little, and they both just emote.
Can I tell you, Lauren, you've given a great list, and I'm very proud of you for being on the spot like that. And not succumbing to Campbell's bullying.
Samoa Joe, that's another good one.
The Coquina
clutch. I think that... Yeah, I hear a knock at the door. That's the Canadian government coming to take your passport away from not saying the sharpshooter. But
yeah, like,
is that a heart? That's a heart.
Yes, that's a heart. Sorry, Josh, we got a little sidetracked.
It's got to be the sharpshooter. It's got to be the cross-faced chicken wing. And shout out to Jiri for the tarantula.
The tarantula! Oh my god.
Yeah. This got 3 3/4 bald heads. This was a great match. I honestly, it bumped it up a little bit. It was 3.5. End of the match picked up for me. And I don't know. Like, it was neat, I think. Like a lot of the stuff, like, really, like, drew me in. Yeah, like, it was neat, you know? Like, I was like, oh, that was neat. Like, I like that. I don't know. I felt a certain kind of way at the end of the match where I felt, like, kind of happy, you know? So I was like, I'll bump it up a quarter. I like this.
Nice. Next up, we are jumping just a few months into the future to Better Than Our Best. From 2006, we've got Bryan Danielson defending his title against Lance Storm. Speaking of Canadians, we got good old Lance T. Storm.
The T stands for Thunder.
I didn't know Lance Storm was Canadian.
What?
I don't know anything about him.
He's from Calgary.
Him, like... Okay.
Alberta, Canada.
Good. Good.
I love you, Lauren. I'm sorry for yelling at you.
I mean, he didn't say that, so how am I supposed to know that? But yeah.
That's true. He didn't say it this time. But like, so a little history on Lance Storm. He was in ECW at first, but when he went to WCW, he won the United States Championship and turned it into the Canadian Championship.
The shade. I love that.
That's how Canadian this man is. I would say the most Canadian.
I don't believe in borders or nation states, so all of this means... this match kicks off fucking hot. This, like, it's still technical, but it's way more vicious. It's way more hard-hitting. It's less, like, showy of, like, oh, I'm going to do a wrestle. You're going to do a little flip out of it. It's like, we're getting some slams. We're getting some kicks. We're getting, it like... It's a through line to like Danielson's character, but it is kind of a thing now where it's like, oh, I got the championship and now I'm out here defending it. And it does feel like an extension of the story, feels like an extension of the character that I really appreciated.
Yeah. And something I noticed too, it seems like that Bryan Danielson kind of like gauges the crowd on each match and then bases how heel or face he's going to be in the match based on the crowd reaction, right? And, like, I feel like Lance Storm kind of being, like, an ECW darling and yada, yada, yada. I feel like, you know, he knew the crowd was kind of be on Lance Storm's side a little bit. Lauren, I'm curious. So, not knowing much about Lance Storm, what did you think about Lance Storm in this match?
It was interesting. I don't know anything about him other than what the commentary team was telling me.
Yeah.
And I thought the commentary team did a really great job of selling the stakes of this match, which is that he was retired and that he now teaches wrestling. But like the whole time I was like, and so Lance has retired. He's won all kinds of belts, but he's never had this belt. And so those are the stakes of the match. But And also, like, as a little sidebar, I was interested to see whether, like, and this didn't last long, but I was interested to see whether Bryan would be the heel or if Lance would be the heel because he's, like, not a stranger because obviously he's famous, but he's, like, the outside guy coming in and challenging the champion. And I was like, oh, well, maybe Bryan is going to be the a heel character, but who is the face in this match because he's the ROH champion, like he's the darling. But it fully wasn't that. Like everyone was totally really excited about Lance Storm. Everyone was very behind Lance Storm. But yeah, so it also the other thing about that is like Bryan Danielson is like he is the fighting defending champion and he looks fucked up when this match starts. Like he's got these welts all over his chest. Commentary tells me that he fought an hour long match the night before against Roderick Strong.
Which is insane.
Yeah. And I'm like, and you're supposed to make, I'm supposed to want this guy to lose?
Like, why the fuck didn't they have that match in this compilation? You know?
The hour long Roderick Strong match.
But that's such a good point. Like, yeah. And that, like, it speaks to how good he is that he still got the crowd to boo him, right? Then totally. He's still like Lance is over. I love that the I have until five ref is like a catchphrase at this point. Like people in the audience are like saying it along with him.
They were absolutely ready for it, and like he was ready for it. Everyone was like totally primed. It felt more like a WWE like branding of like this moment, this catchphrase.
Do you guys notice during his match on AEW against Kenny Omega, he did that same thing? He says I have until five.
Yeah.
He totally did.
It's great.
But yeah, like, so Lance Storm has traditionally worked heel. Bryan Danielson being able to get over as a heel, I totally agree with you both. That's, like, a testament to, like, Bryan and, like, how good he is. And then also, like, you know, Lance Storm always working heel. I think going into an environment, especially, like, Ring of Honor, where they respect good, pure technical wrestling, there's not a chance in hell that Lance Storm was going to be booed. So I think they got that right from the start, and they've worked the match appropriately, and it was very good.
I do on your point where you're saying commentaries, oh, Lance Storm has held every title in the book, and this is the Ring of Honor, and they start listing the titles, and they're like the WWF World Tag Championship, the WCW World Tag Championship. I'm like, Like, seems like there's a couple of major belts that he might have missed out on holding there.
But I think the story they're trying to tell is that he's held every belt that wasn't the world championship, right? Like in ECW, WCW, WWE was like US title, cruiserweight title, tag team title. He's held everything but the big one. And so winning the ROH one would be the big one for Ryan Storm. So that was the importance for him, right?
Okay. Well, when you say it that way, it really ruins my bit.
Okay, go on. So what's so funny about that, Campbell?
All right, moving on.
No, go on with your little joke, your little bit.
I guess I did it already, so maybe it wasn't very good. My favorite thing about this match is that watching this, there's elements of things that I like. You were talking earlier about the way that Kenny Omega puts a match together. There are elements in this match that remind me of the way that Omega puts a match together, or the way that like Okada puts a match together, where every single spot in this match is like a match in and of itself, right? Yeah. Like nobody just does a move. It's always jockeying for position, and there is a story to be told about, okay, so, you know, Lance Storm tries to put Danielson in like a wrist lock. Danielson goes into the ropes and gets out of the wrist lock and hits him with a kick, and that gives Danielson the time to go up to the top rope. So there's a clear-cut advantage to winning the contest of the wrist lock. And then from now, Danielson is on the top rope, Storm jumps up, and they have another little fight to see who's going to get the better position for the big devastating move off the top rope. Yeah. And it's everything builds to the next step, and every little step there is a fight to get there. It's not just like, I'm going to do a kick, and then you're going to do a suplex, and then I'm going to do a dive to the outside, spot, 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 which is fine. Like, not to say, like, oh, these dang spot monkeys, the Young Bucks, like, Kenny Omega, you fucking piece of shit!
Kenny Olivier!
But it's like, it's so interesting watching a match like that and like kind of like realizing what's happening there, where it's like every little thing is a smaller wrestling match.
It's very cool.
Builds to who wins the overall thing. I fucking love that.
Very natural and very believable. Like, it could almost be a real fight, but
totally. And it's, again, it's that thing where it's like, I'm so used to seeing that in every promotion everywhere now. And going back and watching it in fucking 2006 is, you know?
And, like, Lance Storm must have been having the best time in that match. Because Lance Storm, you know, was always, like, kind of credited being, like, the best technical wrestler kind of in the business, right? Like, so, coming into Ring of Honor and wrestling somebody like Bryan Danielson for Lance Storm must have been a real treat. So he must have loved that match, just, like, knowing that he can, like, let go a little bit and like tell a good story in the ring, you know, like exchange, like kind of like those moves. And like, I don't know. I thought this match, they told a great story. It was really enjoyable. Lance Storm, I think, probably retired very shortly after this and kind of,
well, that was the thing that kept bugging me, was because commentary kept saying he's retired. He came out of retirement for this match. And I was watching the match and I was like, why'd this buddy retire? He's in like great shape. He's doing like flips and dips and dives and kicks. I was like, this guy is going hard. Why are you trying to sell it to me like he's a retired old man? Like, he's in fantastic shape. Like,
yeah, next time you see him, Lauren, you got to chant, "You still got it, Adam."
Yeah.
Just before we get to the ending, I want to shout out one fucking thing in this match. The best part of this match was the camera work on that belly-to-back suplex off the top rope.
Yeah.
That, where the cameraman was standing right under them, shooting up, and, like, followed them all the way down.
Like, they were coming from, like, the highest height going over. Like, it really shows the arc of the move. It was wild.
It gave me vertigo watching it, you know?
Sure, yeah.
I called that a crazy flip slam.
All right. Why don't you give us some play-by-play on the end of the match then?
I'll do my best. So Brian's doing his chicken wingy submission movie.
Cattle mutilation.
Cow mutilation, because he's a vegan. And he's got Lance's arms behind his back. And he does this really cool thing that I love it when people do this, where they refuse to let them go. It's not like there's a break. Like, they hold them for 1, 2, and then they kick out and they completely drop their any kind of hold on the person. They just let them fall and they go like, what the fuck? Brian refuses to let go of Lance and he keeps flipping over into, like, he'll flip over either and sink in the submission, or he'll flip over and do a pin, like a bridging pin thing. And he did it like 3 or 4 times. And it was finally on the last, like, I think it was like a bridge, but it was also a submission instead of a pin. I don't know these things, but it was definitely a submission. And that's the one that got him.
The cattle mutilation.
The cattle mutilation. Yeah.
Which is a great name for a finishing move. Fantastic. Submission. It's great. Yeah. I was like, this is like the original wrist control, right?
Yep. Like, yep.
You know?
You got it.
Like, and it serves the same purpose as like that New Japan thing again 15 fucking years later. It serves the same purpose of like, oh, like Okada's hit him with 7 Rainmakers already and he's still holding the wrist. They're both down lying on the mat, the guy kicked out of the pin, but he still has the hold, right? It's exactly what you're saying, that it's Danielson still with the arms behind the back. It's fucking great.
This makes me excited about Bryan Danielson, because it's like he's such a wizard and he's such a technician, and I feel like he's been like clipped for the last like, you know, 10 years or whatever it is. And like, not to say he hasn't had great matches and been able to show off different things, but I feel like the stuff he truly loves is this like overly technical super worker style of match that he hasn't been able to do. And like, It's a damn shame, because it's so entertaining. Like, he's so good in his element, and he must be over the moon right now. He must be so happy.
Yeah, I feel like it's the difference between, like, WWE is way more formulaic, and every match, like, every Daniel Bryan match feels like a Daniel Bryan match, and you know you're going to expect certain rhythms and certain moves at certain times and stuff like that. And that goes for all of their wrestlers. That's not just Daniel Bryan, it's everybody. And it seems like Bryan Danielson, like in his Ring of Honor career and hopefully in his AEW career, it seems like he thrives off of like creativity and innovation and like mixing things up. Like, of all of these 4 matches that we're covering tonight, there are moves that he does that are his, but the matches all feel different and they have different feelings and rhythms and stories, and I think I'm excited to see that in the future.
It's like if we were to do like any Daniel Bryan match, I could tell you probably within a minute of it happening, like, this is when he's going to do the yes kicks, this is when he's going to do a suicide dive, this is when he's going to do the run up, the turnbuckle, backflip, comeback.
And he's got great fire as like, totally Daniel Bryan, right?
It's their style of booking, and their product is like, oh, it has to be the same every time, because we have to give people a consistent product.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a little bit more. He's still going to do all of those moves. All the ingredients are there.
Yeah.
But when he uses them and how he uses them are going to be different.
But y'all forgot he is the best wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the whole thing with WWE. It's like, yeah, like, you must have forgot, just based on how he's booked, that you go back and watch his shit, and he was the best wrestler in the world back in 2007.
Yeah.
Like, think about how good it's going to be, and think about how good that Kenny Omega match was. Like,
that was fucking, oh my god. Like,
he still got it. Whew. He still got it, and you know he's been brewing up shit in his head for the last, like, 10 years. He's waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's got like free reign with all these fucking amazing wrestlers. You know he's going to be in the G1 next year, which is going to be fucking fantastic. Like, you know, like there's so much coming up. Him and Zack Sabre Jr., I know you two aren't big Zack Sabre fans, but
That match in England is going to be fucking fire.
My favorite rumor that I read recently is that Vince was going to let Daniel Bryan do the G1 this year to stay with WWE, but also that Vince didn't know what the G1 was. Like, he thought it was like King of the Ring, where they just do it in one day.
That's incredible. That's incredible. And then, I didn't hear that part.
It's just a rumor. I don't know if that's true or not, but I read that, and I laughed my fucking ass off.
I
would 100% believe it. Oh, the G1. What the hell is that? Never heard of it. All right, Brian. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll see you on Monday, right? This got 3 7/8. I like this more than the Jamie Noble match.
Wow.
You
just couldn't bring yourself to bring it to a 4, huh?
Not yet. Not yet. Listen, I know everybody wants to get all sappy and emotional talking about Bryan Danielson. And it's very easy to give these out, you know, these ratings like Dave Meltzer, you know, throwing them out like nothing. This is a serious system that I have here. And, you know, if I were to rate this match differently than I would you know, a GCW or a... You know, whatever, you know, what am I doing to the integrity of the system? Soiling it.
Next up, still in 2006, we are, yeah, sorry, I didn't get the name of whatever the show was. Maybe they didn't write it down. Anyway, it's a title unification match for the Ring of Honor World Championship and the Ring of Honor Pure Championship between Bryan Danielson and Nigel McGuinness.
Damn, this match slapped, eh?
This was fucking sick.
Fucking match.
Nigel McGuinness. A dude that I've heard a lot about, like, it was a play-by-play guy for NXT, and I was like, oh, I heard that guy used to wrestle. That's cool. Never actually seen any of it. He was great.
He was fantastic. He actually was supposed to come on at the same time as Bryan Danielson to the WWE, but he didn't pass a medical check. And there's, like, a whole thing, the Wrestling Road Diaries that Colt Cabana did. Kind of like documented that a little bit, and then Nigel McGuinness released his own kind of documentary kind of going through all that. So what happened was, you know, Nigel McGuinness was like a huge star in Ring of Honor, didn't get the WWE contract, fell into a little bit of depression, some mental health problems, some physical problems, signed on with TNA. He had a little run there with, there was a group with, like, Ric Flair, AJ Styles, and all that. So he had Desmond Wolfe, I think.
Sounds
cool. There, but,
sounds cool.
Anyway, like, it's really too bad about Nigel McGuinness because, you know, he was kind of destined on the same path as Daniel Bryan, but it just didn't work out for him.
Was it just, like, he... fell into obscurity and chose to walk away, or was it like an injury thing where he had to walk away, or was it like for his mental health or what?
I think it was a little all of the above. Like, you know, after he didn't get it, I think that affected his mental health, and just kind of watching his documentary and stuff like that, it really like kind of like dialogues and walks through like kind of like his struggles with all that. So it's a good watch. I'd recommend anybody checking it out and kind of like seeing his story. And you know, it's too bad because, like, I think as we all saw in this match, he was hella fucking talented. And, he had the look, he had the size, and he for sure had the in-ring ability.
I know, I remember seeing Nigel McGuinness, like, I guess probably when he was doing commentary for NXT. I still feel like he maybe did commentary for something else in addition to NXT, but anyway... I think of him as a Daniel Bryan-sized man, but seeing him in the ring with Bryan Danielson, he was a big man, and he was in amazing shape. I was like, this man is way bigger than I thought he was, and I'm sure it's because he was, like, peak wrestling career, and when I saw him for commentary, he was a commentator primarily and a wrestler. Not really a wrestler anymore, so he probably shrank a bit, but I was just like, Fuck, he's like huge. He looks great. He's a big muscle boy.
And Dean Ambrose got the wacky line from him.
Oh my god.
Oh, my favorite move. I don't know if you could tell from his ring gear, but he is from England. I don't know if that was obvious. It was pretty subtle. It was pretty subtle. You might have missed it.
A little on the nose.
Okay, so just to like set up this match, I'm going to take us through the rules, the stipulations, the stips. So you get three rope breaks. Each competitor gets three rope breaks. Once
Which is cool,
all three,
right?
You get no more. Yeah. You just cannot use a rope break as a thing anymore.
Yeah.
You have 20 seconds outside the ring. It's a 20 count instead of a 10 count, like in New Japan. And it's a unification match. But yeah, like, so basically they were saying like, if it's a double count out, there's no title change.
No, they specifically said if it's a double count out, the match will be restarted.
Right.
I fucking love the pure rules. I think it's such a, it's like the perfect like stipulation that heightens the stakes of a match but doesn't overshadow the match. It doesn't get in the way.
Totally.
Some people think it's a little like overcomplicated, but it's very simple and it fucking kicks ass.
You know, all I was thinking in this match is that for Kenny Omega versus Bryan Danielson, if it's not going to be an Iron Man match, I would love to see it be a pure wrestling rules match. That's all I was thinking during this match was like the three rope breaks each, like, you know, like all of the same steps that like Bryan Danielson like implements on a match to like make it happen. Like, I think this would be fantastic because I was so invested, right? Like, it was like when they were both like, we'll get into the match, but like running through the breaks and all that stuff, I was like, oh man, this is such a like a new stake on the match that I'm like completely about.
I haven't been watching a lot of current Ring of Honor, but I do know that they recently did an entire tournament that the entire tournament was all pure stipulation.
Oh, awesome.
And Jonathan Gresham, who just wrestled fucking Minoru Suzuki at GCW.
Squidman.
Squidman, yeah, exactly. But he was the pure champion up until like a couple of weeks ago and was having a fucking run and a half with that ship. Like, go back and watch. Like, I think I watched like two or three of those matches. They all kicked ass. They were fucking great. That dude, I really hope he shows up in like AEW for a little challenge Miro, fucking just like, you know, see him wrestle a couple two tree times, because that guy is great. But I love the pure rules.
I haven't seen anything of Jonathan Gresham, but I've heard he's fantastic. Like and it's on me. I'm like completely out of the loop on Ring of Honor and like kind of what's going on there. But I hear Jonathan Gresham is like the future. Like, I hear he's like that good.
He's like on another level. He is really, really something to watch.
Awesome. I'll check it out.
A thing that I noticed too about like the pure rules, especially with the like the three rope break rule, is it allows for there's so much room for a different story every time. Like, I can see you doing pure matches and having a different trajectory and like a different momentum with each one, and it kind of reminds me of like a 2 out of 3 falls match where like I remember us discussing this in a previous episode where I was like, well, there's like always going to be the same story with a 2 out of 3 falls match. It's always going to end up being they both get two and then the third is like the clincher.
Totally. Yeah.
But it allows for so much more storytelling because you have these things to play with. It doesn't have to be you each get two, or it could be like when you get the first fall or when you both get two falls and like when you each have like one fall left. Like, and this match is a perfect example of that, where they have three rope breaks each. Nigel McGuinness gets fucked over pretty early. Like, he burns through his rope breaks pretty fast, but then he makes Bryan use his really quickly, like in really quick succession, and it really amps up the all of the momentum and all of the stakes in the match, because you're thinking like, fuck, Bryan's in control, like Bryan's destroying him. And then all of a sudden, all of the momentum goes to Nigel McGuinness. We'll get into this more, I guess, but like, yeah, it like it really heightens everything, and you're like, oh my god, like it's gonna happen now, like anything. It feels like the end of the match is about to happen, just totally. Because they're both at that point where they don't have any rope breaks left, and it's like, yeah. That doesn't necessarily be what has to be what has to happen. Like, they could just keep it rolling for a while, but the momentum and the intensity is there. And as a viewer, you're like, oh my god. Like,
and they catered it so well, because, like, McGuinness, the face in the match, used his two rope breaks right away, right? And then it wasn't until later that, like, Danielson used his two rope breaks. And so then it was, like, a real, like, and then, like, and then McGuinness was out. Like, I think, like, you know, he got his foot on the rope. Was it through a cattle mutilation that he got it?
Yep. So that's, like, my favorite thing about this is that the way that they use the rope breaks is to illustrate, like, their wrestling styles, where all of McGuinness's rope breaks are when Danielson has him in submissions, whereas, like, I'm pretty sure, like, a couple of Danielson's, like, rope breaks, maybe one of them was from a submission, but they're more from McGuinness being like, I'm bigger than you, I'm more powerful, I'm going to hit you with this fucking insane power bomb. I'm going to hit you with my, like, finishing move, and you're going to have to grab the rope to get out of the pin.
Exactly.
And it's like, illustrating the difference in styles between them, as well as telling the story and, like, sort of serving as act breaks in the match. Where, like, rather than using, like, a false finish kick out to punctuate something, you have this, like, resource that you can play with. It's so fun. It's just the best.
This was a great sandbox for those two to play in. And, like, it was so good. It was such a good technical match. A point in the match that I didn't like, to be honest, there was a spot on the outside where, like, you know, both the guys were outside, and then they were pulling each other into, like, the steel bar. And now Nigel McGuinness took three unprotected headshots into the steel post onto the outside, and then he busted himself open the hard way with that. And
is busted himself open. Like, he was the one in charge of all of that momentum, but he is still thrashing himself into a steel post.
I hated it. Like, I hated that spot. I thought it wasn't needed in the match, and I'm sure Nigel McGuinness looks back on that and regrets it as well.
It was somewhat quickly redeemed by one of the best suicide dive spots I think I've ever seen.
Totally. Like, everything surrounded it. It's like the shit sandwich, where it's like beauty around it, but a huge load of shit in the middle of it.
I mean, I wouldn't even say it's shit. It's just, like, stressful to watch now with, like, 2021 eyes. But, like, I'm sure at the time that would have been absolutely 2021 vision. Yeah. But, like, oh, man. Because then, they take it to the crowd after that point, and they're jumping around in the chairs, and, like,
so cool.
The crowd is losing their minds, and, like, Bryan Danielson is covered in Nigel McGuinness's blood, and, like, it was so cool. It's like a cinematic moment, I feel like. And it wasn't because it was so orchestrated. Like, clearly Nigel wanted to get busted open, and that's why he went as hard as he did on himself, but it was like, it's one of those things where visually it just looks really fucking amazing.
Speaking of taking it to the crowd, this was the only match where I bought Danielson as a heel, where he beats down McGuinness, and then he sits on the ropes and opens the ropes, like, while the crowd's booing at him, and he says, come on in here, get in here, and then he channels his inner Minoru Suzuki And he stands up and he says, I will kill every single one of you. It was the coolest fucking thing I've ever seen. Oh my God.
It's so cool.
The only thing about this match that I want to nitpick, the only thing that I didn't like about this match, like outside of the fucking hard way, like headbutting the ring post, is I don't think they played in the space enough where... Because there was about a 2 minute span of time where McGinnis didn't have any rope breaks left, and Danielson had one left.
Yeah,
and they didn't play in that space enough to really illustrate the stakes.
Yeah,
there's a point after they both lose all of their rope breaks where Danielson gets McGinnis in the crossface chicken wing. And McGinnis grabs the rope and the ref's like, no, you can't, it doesn't matter. I loved that spot. That should have happened while Danielson still had one rope break left.
I could not agree more. Honestly, I think Daniel's last rope break was a throwaway where it's like, it should have been a bigger deal, right? Like it should have been. Like a bigger build to that spot or something, because I felt like the last rope break he used, it was on kind of like a throwaway. Did Nigel hit him with like a big move or something like that? And then like it's so forgettable. Like it was just.
I literally didn't take note of it. I just wrote down that they both have no rope breaks. I didn't write down the move like that resulted in that.
Yeah, so it was just throwaway, but they could have built that way better. I agree with you there, but the rest of the match, it was awesome. This match.
The only other thing that felt a little weird for me was they get a table involved, and I feel like you shouldn't get a table involved at all unless you're going to pay it off and put someone through the table. And I don't know if that's just because of. Like the stuff that we've seen because of this podcast with like ECW and blah blah blah, and that's what I expect. But like when the table was introduced and Danielson just kind of crushes McGinnis with it, and then it goes away, and it also like it seems like it evaporates. Like I don't know what happens to that table, but it's gone later.
If a table is introduced in the first act, somebody must go through it by the end of it, right? Chekhov's table.
Chekhov's table. Very good.
I agree with you there. And especially for like a pure rules match, like you don't need the table. You already kind of have all of the stipulation that you need.
Yeah.
I do love that it's ended due to ref stoppage.
The ending was so good. The ending
was
so good.
Fucking awesome.
It was amazing.
Like it's both. It's Shawn Michaels it's fucking Bret Hart Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13, where it is a definitive win for Danielson, but leaves the door open for the story to continue with McGinnis, right? It's a perfect wrestling finish for me.
And McGinnis looks strong as fuck because he doesn't give up. He refuses to give up. He just passes the fuck out because he's getting elbowed in the head and neck repeatedly.
Well, listen. I just want to throw a quick anchor into this. I'm
anchor
say
us,
that,
baby.
You know, the WrestleMania 13 ending with Bret Hart and Stone Cold was bigger for other reasons, and I wouldn't compare the two because it was the classic double turn in a situation.
Sure. But like, I still think that in terms of like a guy, I'm not going to say the same thing that I just said already. I don't have a better way of saying it.
I don't know. Heads. It's like, that's
just
a
get
bit,
to the bald head.
That's a big leap. You know,
I get that that was big for other reasons, but I think that like one of the things that is good about that WrestleMania ending is also good about this match.
Okay. I won't push the issue. This was 4 1/8 bald heads. This was fantastic. I love this match.
A whole obscure quarter bald head better than the last match.
It was a quarter and an eighth. better than the last match.
The last one was 7/8, and so you put at 1/8 plus 1/8. Yeah.
That's 2/8. That's a quarter.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Welcome to Stone Cold Math, the podcast where the shots are cold and the math
is harder. I don't know. So to give you an idea of my rating of this match, you know, what I was thinking about, I couldn't get out of my head, is that I remembered that I rated like the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Hangman Page 4.25. I was like, was that as good as this match? I don't think it was. I think it was pretty close, but I don't think it was as good as that match.
Fair enough. I also want to shout out.
It was
this
very
match
good.
When I was
very good match.
When I was watching this, I have this great fucking bootleg Bryan Danielson shirt from Bad Street that has him with like a bloodied forehead holding the Ring of Honor World Championship and the Pure Championship. Oh. And when I saw this like title card come up, I was like, huh, I wonder if this is the match where. And then at the end of it, he's like. He didn't do the pose that's on the shirt, but like he's got the bloody forehead, and he just won both those belts. I'm like, damn, that's cool. That's cool that I've watched the match that is on that shirt now.
Honest to God, like I felt like I like a fake wrestling fan for not watching all these matches before. I had no business cheering Daniel Bryan before I had seen this series of matches, which are fantastic. These are all fantastic matches.
So much of this does really make me want to go back and watch a lot of that like early, or like I guess like late aughts Ring of Honor.
Yeah,
I do really really want to go back and check out some of that, like CM Punk, Samoa Joe, Tyler Black, Kenny Omega. Oh, hey, speaking of Tyler Black and Kenny Omega.
Oh, what possibly could this be a reference to a transition for?
Our next and final match. Coming to you live from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Although I would bet you $100 Canadian dollars that this definitely took place in like fucking Mississauga.
Yes.
Is Bound by Hate 2008. So nice they made it rhyme twice. We've got a triple threat match, a three-way dance between the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, Kenny Omega, and Tyler Black for no ship at all, just for the hell of it, you know?
Yep, yep. How cool is this?
Little baby Kenny Omega, he's so small, and his hair's so short, and he's got such a young face. Seth Rollins and Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson look the same, but like Kenny Omega is really like just a young boy coming into the industry. And I was so excited. I was saying to Campbell in this match that like I wish Kenny repped Canada more, because I felt so much like hometown kid, like he's our Canadian boy and he's doing
good
so
Canadian
well.
Kid, keep your stick on the ice.
Yeah, like in this match, I was so like behind him for that reason. And I feel like he doesn't like, and I wonder if that's because he's such a fucking shitty heel, but he doesn't talk about Canada at all. Like he's always like, I'm like from this place that's many, many miles away from this other American place, instead of just saying I'm from Canada. And it's like, fuck you, Kenny. Rep us.
I think for a while, though, they were billing. Don Callis, when he was doing his whole speech, he would say, from the wrestling capital of the world, Winnipeg, Canada. And he was saying, my favorite recently that I had to go and Google was when Don Callis said that, I think Don Callis said Kenny Omega was a number one draft pick for the NHL.
Yeah.
And I was like, I knew he played goalie for a little bit, but I don't think he ever made it that far.
Totally not. He was not a number
even
one
close,
draft pick.
Bud.
They only do it when it benefits the story. Like, they made a big deal about the fact that Kenny Omega is Canadian when he was going up against Christian Cage, because they're both Canadian wrestlers and they both started together. But they have never billed Kenny Omega as being from Canada. like, now that he's his, this new, like, shit heel iteration of himself, he is never billed as being from Canada, except for when they only highlighted that when he was facing Christian Cage, because it was part of the story where they were like, oh, like, Don Callis gave him his first match on TV, they're both Canadian boys, and like, it's like a hometown thing, even though they're not like from the same place, but like,
well,
otherwise Kenny Omega is billed as being from like fucking Florida or some shit.
This is not true. This is not true.
Yes, it is. He's not billed as being from Canada. They mentioned that he's like, they don't say where he's from. They just say currently residing in this place. They don't say that he's a Canadian boy.
Sometimes they also say by way of Tokyo, Japan. Right, like they also
they do say that. By way of Tokyo, Japan, but
because he's a fucking weeb, he's a fucking otaku, fucking weeb, fucking nerd,
but fucking him and Neon Jericho,
Genesis Evangelion bullshit,
Don Callis, Jericho, they all pump each other's tires up about Winnipeg all the time, so it's definitely broadcasted. Maybe it's not announced, but it's definitely broadcast.
Only when it benefits them, not he doesn't rep Canada, is my point. I wish he would rep Canada more.
Maybe you're getting...
What a nationalist worked. This one is, eh?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, no, but that's what I'm saying. I am getting worked. Like, that's why I'm saying he's such a shit heel, is I think that it might be part of his heel persona, is that he is denying me that, and that he thinks it's like a shitty thing, where it's like similar to how we make fun of like LA, is he's saying I'm this cool American city Hollywood boy. I don't know where he says he's billed from anymore, so I can't say whether it's Hollywood or Florida or whatever, but like, I think it's part of his heel persona is that he is denying his small town Canada-ness, you know.
Winnipeg, Manitoba, famously a small town.
if it's not Toronto, it's a small town.
I was gonna say Christian Cage from downtown Canada, and
no. Christian Cage is from Orangeville.
Should we get into the match? Getting into the match, we got, so you have Danielson as like the pure heel. You have Omega as the Canadian babyface. You got Tyler Black kind of being the little tweener.
Yeah, a little nothing.
And I love
it. He was pretty good. And he looked great in this match.
It's one of those things where it's like watching this and seeing where they're all at now. And
yeah.
And Tyler Black, Seth Rollins, like, he's the architect in this match, right? He's the guy who's trying to direct traffic. Hey, Kenny Omega, you and I team up. We take out Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson. And it is that character that he played in WWE, like even then, you know?
Yeah.
I do see that point now. Like, and when you brought it up to me, like, but I can see that argument, but also a big part of me when I was watching this match was I was thinking Tyler Black is an ancillary character in this match, and Tyler Black isn't being utilized, and I am not seeing any of his moveset. I'm not seeing him showcase himself. This match is all about Kenny versus Bryan Danielson. Like, I really felt like Tyler Black didn't need to be there. And then at the very end, he sort of gets more offense in. But for most of the match, they're just playing keep away. Like, they're just keeping him out of the match. And I was like, I don't know if it needs to be a three-way if Tyler Black is that.
Yeah, like, I see that. Like, he was there to, like, break up, like submissions, like come in, like, do the occasional thing and yada, yada, yada. But it really was a story about Bryan Danielson and Kenny Omega in this match. I couldn't agree with you more.
At no point in the match are you watching it thinking, I think Tyler Black might win this. You
know? Whenever Tyler Black's in the ring, everybody in the ring has to be like, where's Tyler Black?
But the match, it's like, I don't have a whole lot to say about this match other than it's just fun watching these guys, you know, this many years ago and just knowing what's coming for all of them.
Sure.
And like knowing sort of like where they're going to be and how like exciting it is to go back and watch this.
It's cool. Like it's really cool, right? Like, so you got to see a lot of like the signature moves. You got to see like Kenny Omega doing a lot of his dramatic stuff, and like seeing Kenny Omega back then compared to Kenny Omega now, how far he's come and like how, like, you know, like how much he's evolved is like in ring style. Same with Tyler Black, right? Like, so it's like Seth Rollins now is on another level. Like, I still think like Seth Rollins is like one of the best in ring like workers of all time. He's so good. But like in this match, he's just like kind of like big spots, breaking up stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's just there as like an ancillary piece. So
to me, he's more charisma than he is wrestler in this match. Like, to me, Tyler Black, again, like, I see WWE as recruiting personalities as well as wrestlers. Like, they really care about the whole package, the entire persona. And you can see the building blocks of Seth Rollins in Tyler Black here. I also do think it's really interesting. Like, obviously, we just watched Bryan Danielson versus Kenny Omega now, like, just last week. That in comparison to watching Kenny Omega versus Bryan Danielson in 2008 is crazy because, like, I feel like Bryan Danielson had already made it and had honed in his craft and his character and his wrestling style to such a point at that point already. And I feel like Kenny was just starting or, like, had so much more to go. Like, he had so much more potential to grow. And it's wild to see him as the top guy of AEW now and how polished and how fantastic a storyteller and, like, character that he is and a fantastic, like, phenomenal wrestler. And it's wild to see because I don't imagine they're very far apart age-wise, but, like, it really feels like Kenny Omega is the baby and Daniel Bryan is like his teacher and like helping him hone his craft. And I don't know if that's minimizing or patronizing to say, but like it's wild to see how far Kenny Omega has come.
Skipping, I guess, like this match ends with the stiffest fucking elbow I have ever seen in my life.
Crazy.
Bryan does not go easy on his little baby boy, Kenny Omega. Just clocks him in the fucking eye with his elbow. Kenny goes down hard. I don't know if it's Kenny selling or if it's Kenny just being, like, kind of blacked out or, like, seen stars.
Legitimately knocked out.
His eye fucking explodes. Like, his face blows up from being struck with such force. It's fucked up. It's not okay.
It's not okay.
It was the best.
It was so cool. Like, but like also, like, we can't not mention the double cattle mutilation that happened during this match because it was fucking sick as hell.
Yeah, that was cool.
But, like, Danielson wins and with the cattle mutilation, single on Kenny Omega. What a match. Like, I thought this was fun. It was a really short match. But it was a really fun match while it was going on. I gave it 3.5 bald heads.
What a fun match. Yeah. If they don't call back that elbow in this current Danielson Omega feud, I will be very upset.
Yeah.
It had to have been a huge deal. Like, that was a huge moment. And they would be silly not to bring it up.
Omega's just lucky it happened in Canada where he had healthcare to fucking stitch that bad boy up. And then my favorite thing is after the match, it becomes very apparent. I don't know if you notice this in the audio. It becomes very apparent that if Tony Khan can't afford the Final Countdown by Europe, then Ring of Honor's YouTube channel sure as shit doesn't have the dough for it.
No way, Jose.
They cut the feed so awkwardly. Mm-hmm. And it's like all of the other matches for this, no entrances. And as soon as the pin happens, it's just like, and the next one. Like, there's no fucking, it was just like, oh, we don't have the money for that anymore. We actually never had the money for that.
We don't even want to snip Europe on this one. Like, there's no chances it's going to happen.
Like, I don't know what I'm going to use as the intro to this episode, you know?
Any music at all.
Yeah, like, I was thinking
about...
You have
to play the entire Final Countdown.
Yeah, all of the Final Countdown. I was thinking of doing a fun little goof and playing the theme song from the Disney cartoon American Dragon Jake Long, you know? But then I realized Disney is also famously very litigious, so...
Come right ad hominem on you on that one, buddy.
Yeah.
How crazy is it that for all of these matches, Bryan Danielson wins every single one? How do we feel about that?
Feel great. Feel
He's
great.
He's just
about
that good. I again, first ever favorite wrestler. I will never be mad about Bryan Danielson winning a match. It's just like I can't. You know, anytime I see him win, I'm just like, yeah. This takes me back to like when I was first. And I mean, I was a grown-ass man, kind of, but, like, when I was first exploring wrestling and figuring out, like, what this is and, like, how do I interact with this? How much do I buy in? How much do I, like, coolly stand off and be like, I know it's fake, I'm just watching it for the stunts and the spots or whatever, like, and he, going back to the start of the episode, he was the guy that I was, like, every time I watched him, I was like, I want this guy to win, I want this guy to succeed in a way that I didn't feel about, like, fucking John Cena or Roman Reigns or whoever else is kind of there at the beginning.
You know, it's like you just want this man to win everything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I feel like it speaks to Brian's charisma and, like, in-ring ability and just him in general where you're like, it feels right that he wins.
Yeah.
Yes. 100%. This is a great little retrospective of Danielson's sort of like a Ring of Honor tenure. We probably could have watched the Samoa Joe match. I'm sure there's like, we could have watched the hour long Roderick Strong match. I'm sure there's a bunch of shit. And for me, it's a thing where it's like, this piqued my interest in, you know, old Ring of Honor, but more than anything, I'm just fucking stoked to see like Danielson in AEW. I'm stoked to see Danielson potentially in the G1. I'm stoked to see, like, fucking anywhere this dude wants to go.
It's like a world of fucking potential.
I will be right fucking there.
Fucking crazy. What a time to be alive. 2021, the end of the year. CM Punk is back. Bryan Danielson is back. Adam Cole's in AEW. Who knows where Bray Wyatt's going to end up. This is fantastic. I cannot wait for 2022. As a wrestling fan, this has been the most exciting year, and what a great retrospect to look back on somebody for.
Yeah, the wrestling world is our oyster.
So we like to shut things down here, close things up with a little high spot and a botched spot, some honorable mentions to something that we really liked and something that we didn't care for quite so much. Who wants to... Okay, Lauren, ready to go.
So my high spot for the whole roster of matches that we watched is just Bryan Danielson as a heel. You brought up some moments. I'm going to highlight a few more. So it's Bryan Danielson working heel, saying crazy shit to the crowd in his really lovable, nerdy way. So the first one is, I have till 5, ref, which he does all the time, and it's excellent. The crowd's on board. So there's a great spot that like seems to be one of Brian's moves, is that he will like, he's setting up for that like boat submission where he
Okay.
A Mexican surfboard submission where he, and to set it up, he's like rocking them, right, to get the momentum to go backwards onto his back to submit them up in the air. And he, Bryan, as like a big heel move, he'll go, whoa, 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 up to the third. And so it's like, it's mocking, it's shitty, and like it's something that it's participatory for the crowd.
And then he'll stomp, like he won't even do the move. He'll just stomp on their thighs.
So that was, yeah, so like he, that's his like thing, is he does the big whoa mocking thing. And then in one of these matches for the Nigel McGuinness one, he pauses, and instead of taking him up on the third one, he says, "Screw you, people!" And he just stomps on their on his knees, and it's fantastic. And then the last one was the one that Campbell already highlighted, where during the Nigel McGuinness match, the fans are yelling at Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson, and he says, "Why don't you get in the ring? I'll kill every single one of you." And it's so unbelievable, but it's so fantastic.
It's I noticed this too on I don't know if it was like last Wednesday or if it was Friday or whatever, but like there are certain mannerisms that Danielson has where like when he tries to sound tough, he sounds like a fucking 6-year-old trying to sound tough. So like when he said "screw you people" is exactly the same as like when he called Don Callis, when he was like, "Shut up, you piece of shit," is like, it literally sounds exactly the same as like when Brody Lee Jr. told Excalibur to shut up on commentary. Like there's no difference in how believable he is as like a mean person. He just sounds like a child, you know? And I love him.
Okay, and my botch spot is just a funny moment. So we understand that Bryan Danielson's submission move is the cow massacre move.
Okay, that's a new name for it, so go on. That is 100% what we're calling it from now on.
So he like chicken wings the guy's arms behind their back in like a little chicken wing submission. And so he's doing this in the Lance Storm match, where Lance Storm is being held face down with his little chicky arms behind his back. And he tries to escape Lance Storm, and he ends up just flapping his teeny tiny little arms behind him really ineffectually. And it looks
his little
really
chicken
silly.
Wings.
His little chicken wings are flapping around like little T-Rex arms. And that looks silly in and of itself. But then it just gets worse because his hands are behind his back, and Lance Storm taps, and he's tapping his ass, and he's basically, like, I don't know if this is a camera angle thing, or if this is just because of how Bryan Danielson had his arms. The way that Lance Storm submitted this match was him just slapping his own ass repeatedly, and it was just humiliating. Very much humiliating and just really silly looking, and that's my botch spot.
Well, my high spot of the entire night was the Nigel McGuinness match. I thought that entire match, front to back, was great. Specifically within the match, again, like McGuinness playing the big bruiser that like was hitting him with like these big like finishing moves. Danielson coming back out, technically working him. I thought the whole thing was fantastic. Same spot in the match. Was my low spot, which was the hard head spots where they're ramming themselves into the post. Not necessary. Like, I didn't feel like it added anything to the match. And also, it took years off your fucking career. What are you doing? Like, this is dumb. This is dumb. It didn't add anything to the match. Guys in the future, please be more responsible. Don't do shit like that.
My high spot was I was gonna say like the Nigel McGuinness match, but like specifically the stipulation, like the pure stipulation,
yeah.
I think is fantastic. More simple but effective storytelling stipulations like that I think need to come into, like, it doesn't have to be just like a ladder match or fucking like whatever. Like, you can do interesting things like that. More belts with their own stipulations,
totally,
know? Give me that.
Yeah,
I love that. For my botch spot, I want to take you on a journey. Okay, I want you to come with me. I want you to picture yourself. You're a handsome butcher. You're sitting on your couch. You're watching some wrestling. You're watching, say, Bryan Danielson versus James Gibson, in 2005 and you're like, wow, this crowd's really hot. This is a really hot crowd, you know? Something feels different, though. And 25 minutes into the match, you realize, you know what it is? They're not chanting. They're just cheering. They're just, it's a natural, you know, it's a natural thing. And you're like, wow, that's really great. That's really great. And then you fast forward a few minutes and you're watching another match. Say maybe Bryan Danielson versus Lance Storm from 2006. And you can hear the crowd start to say, "You still got it." And you can hear the crowd, it's just at the very start of the match, and then it kind of goes away, and you're like, okay, cool, yeah, I can still enjoy this. The crowd's genuinely enjoying this. And then you go to fucking Britain. And of course the Brits are going to chant. The Brits introducing to chanting to wrestling is maybe the worst thing they've ever done in the country. And by the fucking time we get to 2008, it's... "You're gonna get your fucking head kicked in," or whatever the chant was, and the fucking "fuck him up, Omega, fuck him up." And it's I had to watch in real time the introduction of my least favorite element of professional wrestling. Like, I got to watch a time capsule of chants making their way into the zeitgeist, and it destroyed me.
Oh, Campbell, I'm so sorry.
Says the originator of the "take a shower" chant.
Yeah.
I was young. It was a different time.
Okay.
You know.
Can we all agree that chants are fun sometimes, right?
Chants are fun sometimes. They're like cookies. Right? Cookies are a sometimes food. Chants are a sometimes chant.
Sometimes fun. So you have to appreciate, at the time, it was a novelty. You watch the introduction of these chants being brought in. So of course it's fun. "Joe's gonna kill you." I remember being at a show in 2009 with Smojo versus AJ Styles in a venue in Ottawa. "Joe's gonna kill you" chant. I had never heard that before. It was fantastic. So it's when a chant gets beaten to death and then resurrected and then beaten to death again, I feel like that's annoying. But, like, you know.
No, I mean, like, obviously I'm being facetious here, and you are once again over-explaining the joke and killing my bit. But
tell your little joke about the chants here. What's going on?
I already did it.
The joke is already explained.
You're really no-butting me here. You know what I mean? It's the thing where it's like, I was watching this, and it was in that first match where I was just like, damn, this is a hot crowd, and like something feels different and something feels weird. And it's like, it's because there wasn't like 2 minutes into the match, after they'd done all the wrist lock reversals, there wasn't like a room full of people going, "This is awesome," or "Fight Forever." Like, those specific things like really irk me. And there was like an element of this of like just watching more and more chants get like peppered in over the course of watching this, and in a similar way to watching like the Triple Threat, where I was like, wow, I'm so excited for where these three men are going to go in their careers, and then watching this and being like, wow, I'm so disappointed in where wrestling crowds have gone in their careers. Like,
I feel like obviously, it's different when you're there for a live thing. Like, any chant is fun when you're there live. But also, like, I think for you, Campbell, it's when the chant takes away from the viewing experience, and where the crowd considers themselves a character. And it's like they detract from the actual storytelling, or they detract.
Well, I think the problem, Campbell, is you have to stop being so problematic. Like, let people enjoy stuff, you know?
Why do you hate fun?
That's me. They call it. Hey, that's why I'm the heel host. That's why I'm the heel host. You know, somebody's got to say it. And
Just let people enjoy stuff, Campbell. Like, what's your problem,
to everyone out in the Stone Cold Chats universe, I will kill every single one of you.
He still got it.
So you out there in the Stone Cold Shots universe, please write into us. Tell Campbell why he sucks so hard and why he doesn't
appreciate fun. And
tell
him why he's still got it.
Please let us know.
And then every response he replies to you with, reply with what?
Fuck you. I think that about does it for us. If you want to leave us a nice rating or review, you can hit us up at Stone Cold Shots Podcast or Stone Cold Shots Pod on Instagram and Twitter. We're on Facebook.com/Stone Cold Shots Podcast. You can go to your podcast app of choice and leave us how many bald heads, Josh?
5 bald heads. You gotta leave us 5 bald heads.
There you go. That's
5 bald heads.
That's what I want to hear, bro. We will catch you in 2 weeks. I promise we're not going to take another hiatus. Maybe we're going to do some GCW. Maybe we're going to do some G1. I promise you that our next episode is going to be the best fucking podcast you have ever heard in your life.
We're back, baby, and we're back full time. You know why? Lauren, yeah, we'll figure it out. You know why? Because we still got it. We still got it.
Yeah.